Glad to have you with us as we talk about the issues of the day. And standing by with us now from his law office in Washington, D.C. is Tom Burch, who is a member of a preeminent law firm up there and also a lobbyist in behalf of veterans issues and one who monitors legislation under consideration by the Congress. Tom, thanks again for joining us.
Always a pleasure to be with you.
Well, we're delighted to have you with us. And once again, from what you can see from your vantage point, practically in the shadow of the Capitol Dome, what do you make of the Clinton health care proposal?
Well, first, it's going to have hard going, even though they're all kind of smiling and everything. And everybody, nobody wants to be against health care because everybody needs it, and that's not a good political thing, but I think it's got a real fight. And I can make a couple assessments on that. The first fight is going to be that the Clinton doesn't have very much political capital up here right now. He's had a couple key votes, and he's only won by one vote. For a new president who's been in office less than 9 months, that's a pretty poor showing. So he doesn't have the steam to get over any really touchy issues. And, of course, he certainly has to do a lot of compromising. I think the real fight is going to be over, you know, who pays for this. I think that even though the Republicans, I mean, they certainly have a lot of votes up there, are not going to be against health care. They're not going to want small businesses to have to pay, you know, 80% of somebody's health care. They're going to get a lot of, you better believe there'll be a lot of pressures there. So I think this thing is going to get bogged down to a certain extent over who pays, even though that hasn't launched as a huge issue right at this time. I think, secondly, you have to remember that even though that the president has initiated certain guidelines and concepts as to this program, he hasn't actually submitted a bill up to Congress as to how it's to be implemented. And that's when, and it's kind of a hard, and you know, you always have people who don't want to do this for different reasons, but they don't have their arguments articulated because the concrete package is not there. The Congress does not have a piece of legislation to act on yet. And when you get that and see how people plan to implement it, it's, of course, a lot different from the rhetoric of how wonderful and great and how easy and smoothly it's going to work. For instance, last year I was on your program, and we talked about a program that sounded good, but when we got it, they were going to eliminate the VA system to do it. And it didn't look so good when you started seeing how they were going to implement it. So you have to see how the piece of legislation comes in, but watch for a fight of who's going to pay for it.
Well, Tom, I owe you a tremendous debt of gratitude for turning me on to and informing me about H.R. 1300, mm-hmm. the bill that apparently failed to make it onto the House floor last year. H.R. 1300, that was about a 50-page bill. I secured a copy of it through my local congressman at that time and read it, and I must say it was very scary in respect to one point especially, and that was it looked like it had a whole new tax code in it.
Well, that's it. And, of course, what they didn't let people know is how they were going to really tax people over it. And I think that's the whole thing, that you kind of got to see how this looks when they see how they're going to fund it. In concept, it sounds pretty good, and obviously people really need the health care. It's a real crisis. So many people are not getting health insurance. But when you get the details to it, they're going to you just find out there are political problems with it. And nobody really can say very much about it until you get the details, because who wants to be against everybody having adequate health care? Nobody, everybody should have adequate health coverage. And, of course, I keep watching the VA angle of that. You know, there's some things happening that in regard to this type of health care legislation that affects what veterans can expect from the VA. And if you want me to talk about that later, I'll be glad to do it.
Well, that's one thing I think that concerns a number of people, whether they're veterans or not, is if we have one great national health umbrella that is created, it would seem, at least on the surface, that having this adjunct system off by itself would be unnecessary. And yet the veterans you talk with, they are irate because they feel that that system is a compassionate system in some respects. I know there are abuses that have been exposed on some of the TV news magazines, but they feel that they can go there and their problems, whether it's psychological stress, post-traumatic stress, Agent Orange, whatever, that it will be understood more readily than in the civilian sector.
Well, it's far more compassionate what it was, and what I understand of it on the national health care, we feel that the national health care planners and pushers ultimately want to wind down the VA system to the civilian system. And that's, of course, the reason H.R. 13 got clobbered was because they made it front end that they wanted to combine the systems, and now I think the people are coming with this bill say we don't want to do that, but they're laying the groundwork to be done because they like they have this thing that the VA has to be competitive with the civilian system and all of those type of things, and they're just laying the groundwork to try to roll the VA system into it. And I believe if you do truly go to a national health care system, I bet you within 10 years you'll see them roll that VA system into an overall system, and that's just reality, because that's what the politicians got in their minds up here that they're not saying, because they know if they say it now, all the veterans groups will be opposed to it, and it'll be enough to kill off, you know, tight votes on this piece of legislation. But a very good example of how this national health care proposal really doesn't help some of our guys right now. You know, we're very interested in Agent Orange. And right now we've got a VA system. We've got some chiefs up there that are more sympathetic towards us because we've got some real Vietnam vets who are advocates who are the secretary and deputy secretary. And right now they're thinking about adding 3 more diseases to the Agent Orange list. And that certainly wouldn't happen under this national health care program. But if you have that VA system, you still have people who are looking after the particular problems of, Vietnam veterans and veterans in general. And, of course, veterans in general also have a problem with bureaucratic care coming up, but an overall national system I don't think is particularly interested in concentrating on as opposed to the VA system.
I guess we could add parenthetically here that there has been a wave of concern in the last several weeks and months about veterans of the Gulf War who have been returning with parasitic diseases, all of a sudden various skin rashes and nervous disorders that were somewhat latent, apparently, low these many months, but now, all of a sudden, it's coming home to haunt us.
Well, one thing that's helping there is the traditional organizations, the American Legion, disabled veterans, are hopping more on that to make sure that these complaints are not getting the treatment that those of us who came from Vietnam had on Agent Orange. But I have to tell you, there's still a lot more rhetoric than action.
Mm-hmm. Why is it that the Veterans Administration perhaps was so long? I guess this might be a hindsight question, but why was it that they were so long in admitting that there was a real problem with Agent Orange and post-traumatic stress?
I think the real reason is because of the advocacy of the traditional groups. The traditional groups, of course, the American Legion, the Veterans of Foreign Wars, Disabled Veterans, and AMVETS, and they have been the 4 largest. Right now, the coalition, National Vietnam Veterans Coalition, which I'm the chairman of, is the 4th largest veterans organization in this country. But what happened there, those groups were really interested in the concerns of World War II veterans and Korean War veterans, the primary World War II, and it is to really get out there and push for Agent Orange relief and that type of thing. And they actually, if you think back, those groups took it, we're a bunch of whiners. You know, here the Vietnam vets are a bunch of whiners, and they're just trying to get something for nothing. But their emphasis was, getting more hospital beds for World War II victims and problems that they were having as a result of that, and they weren't enough beds. And frankly, they wouldn't push it. And then they got into the mid-80s, they started giving the rhetoric, but they still weren't doing much. And then, frankly, it's the coalition going up there and marching to the hill. And when we're doing that, because we start getting the headlines, start getting some action, start getting some surveys, got Admiral Zumwalt as an ally in this thing, and then you get some thing, and all of a sudden, these groups started losing membership because they weren't advocating issues of Vietnam veterans. And then they got interested. Then things happened. That's what happens in this town.
Well, that seems to destroy the image that many people have of veterans as being a united front.
Oh, they're not yet united. I have to tell you, the traditional organizations, with the exception of a major change in the American Legion, really worked the World War II thing up here. The American Legion has, in the last few years, made yeoman's strides in this town. They work very closely with me, incidentally, on Agent Orange and POWs. And, of course, now all of a sudden we got some interest in them. Now, right now we've got 3 diseases pending before the administrator on Agent Orange, and what we need is some kick-butt stuff. We need your listeners to call the VA, want those next 3 diseases added to the Agent Orange list. The American Legion is getting active, but I have to tell you, I went over to see the deputy secretary last week about it. I got them considering it, but the Veterans of Foreign Wars hadn't been over there to talk to them about it. The AMVETS hadn't been over there to talk to them about it. And I'm not a traditional organization, but I'm over there talking about it. And you're letting me talk about it in your radio show, and I think your listeners are going to let the VA know that they want those next three Agent Orange diseases, the respiratory, the diseases in the prostate cancer and the multiple myeloma. If they add those three, we got all the diseases everybody recognizes that are out there for right now. Not too many cases, but the VA administrator's secretary is going to decide that it looks like next week. Lots of calls, and they will probably push those Agent Orange things over. But we're advocating it. You're letting us get the message out, and I'm sure your listeners are going to be heard up there, and maybe we can push this thing over. But where is the VFW? Where is AMVETS? They're out there working geriatric care.
Well, I think we have a couple of responsive congressmen in this area as well.
You got some good congressmen.
Tom, hold on, if you will. We'll be right back. I need to take a break here, but we'll be right back. Stay with me, if you will. Back once more on this edition of Radio Free Volusia. Tom Birch is a lawyer in Washington. He's standing by from his office in the Capitol this time. We're talking about the president's health care proposal and what it might have, what impact it might have upon the veterans' health care system as well. If we have the Clinton proposal adopted, even say 50% of it, Tom, and yet we were to have the veterans' medical care system still pretty much intact with all of these hospitals and veterans hospital campuses around and nursing homes, and as well as the outpatient clinics in some of the large and medium cities around the U.S., do you expect that in time then these would be converted to just general use hospitals? Anyone's welcome then?
Yes. I think what you're going to find is you'll get your foot in the door. I think that they're going to officially keep the two systems separate. I think that they will give you the rhetoric to keep them separate, but it's no question that the planners of this envision the two systems will get in bind, but they know that they won't be able to get the first piece of this through if they do that because of the fight with the veterans. I think you've got an indicator in there when they say, well, the VA system must be competitive with the civilian system, and on the face of that sounds like a very reasonable thing, but they're going to have some type of criteria to judge that, and you know how governments can manipulate things. I think what I can see is happening is they say they got to be competitive. A couple of years goes by, they say, hey, they're not being competitive because the way the budget office is working out the numbers or whatever, and they say they got to be competitive, not so we got to shut them down and combine them. I just see it coming. That's the strategy. I know this. I know the people who are trying to do this national health care system feel like the whole thing should be combined. You saw that last year in H.R. 1300. They showed their hand and they got clobbered. Now they're going back for another round, but it will come back. And so what you have to do is make sure they don't, when they come up with this legislation, when you see the details of it, that they don't have a lever to do that, because we want them, the veterans want them separate and apart. It's not the greatest system in the world, but we don't want 37 million people overloading that new people and overloading that system that's taken a long time to get there, but it's a very good, it's the best system out there of public health care. And we don't want it degraded. We want to keep it top-notch for our veterans because that's our commitment to them.
Tom, I think it was in about 1983 or 84 under the Reagan administration that under some budget reconciliations there were plans to have certain user fees installed, and under the leadership of, I think it was David Stockman at that time, of the Office of Management and Budget, Reagan's budget chief, there were requirements being implemented for veterans to pay a portion of their health care costs at veterans' hospitals. I think you probably recall
right,
this.
I remember what a revolt.
Did that perhaps set a bad precedent then in this whole
Well, there are multiple things. There's an effort, like for instance, we can get Social Security to reimburse the VA system, or you can get health to do it. We have a problem with the veterans having to do it, but there's merit to having, if there's insurance that help pay for veterans' benefits because they have a health insurance plan or something like that, that all helps drive down the cost, and that's one of the efficiencies. I think one of the things you have to keep in mind, and I want to talk in bigger generalities, but you have to understand the Washington mentality. That's why we're talking. The people that are in the White House, the staffers, the people that are in the health and, the health departments and all that, they are not veterans. that it used to be that you couldn't hold a major position in government or hold a high bureaucratic position if you weren't a veteran. But that day is changing. Veterans are a minority. And the people that are running and putting together these programs are no longer veterans except of the VA. So you understand, when they put together these masterful plans, they don't really are not attuned to looking out for the veteran, and they think this is kind of like something dead weight that they're carrying, and they want to do away with those benefits, and they're not sympathetic to the cause. And so they, not the bureaucrats, when they're writing this legislation, all they're not thinking about writing it in such a way to do that to protect it. They think that's surplage. So you have to be very, very vigilant, because the only advocates we have out there, besides some good congressmen, interesting, you got a couple good ones down your way, real fighters for us, that's Congressman Stearns and Micah, good guys. When you have guys like that, you know, veterans people get interested in your area and call in. You got to call, you got to write. But when you do that, it keeps them online. But our problem up here is the people who brainstorm these ideas are not veterans except of the VA. And a lot of times they're on the defensive because these ideas come into the White House where they don't have veterans represented.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm just wondering now, Jesse Brown, of course, is a veteran, the head of the Department of Veterans Affairs. I'm just wondering if you have had a chance to talk with the secretary.
I have to tell you, I haven't recently talked to Jesse. I met just last week on all this very stuff with the deputy, who is Herschel Goldberg. Herschel used to be head of Veterans Affairs in Arkansas and a close intimate of President Clinton. We got two good men in there, and I have to tell you, there's a big change up here. We had looked at the Veterans Administration, Department of Veterans Affairs, as the enemy, and I'm going to tell you, there's a turnaround with those two men in there. Those two are first-class veterans advocates, and they believe in veterans. They live veterans. They want to do for veterans, and I think one of the reasons that the system has gotten much more compassionate is because of the influence of these two men. They want the veterans to be welcome, be treated right, get a smile when they come in and not get any of this surly treatment that they used to get in years past. And I think it's this new compassion and interest and caring within the Department of Veterans Affairs is a direct result of Jesse Brown and Herschel Goldberg. These are good men. They're top-grade veterans advocates.
But you emphasize that they're in a minority, no play on words intended.
Well, they are in a minority, because not over at the Department of Veterans Affairs, but unfortunately these programs, these grandiose programs, are generated at the White House, Office of Management and Budget, and Department of Health and Human Resources. And you don't have veterans in those outfits. The people who are master planning this, not now, the Department of Veterans Affairs has a seat at the table. But, you know, it's a minority seat, one of many. But they're included in there. But the way the vigilance is not up at the top. The vigilance is people like Congressman Micah and Stearns. The vigilance is your listeners. When they find out what's happening, to make it known to their elected representatives that they want the situation straight and right once they get the correct information. And you're very good, incidentally, by making sure your constituents and your listeners get accurate information. We've worked together before. You're excellent.
Tom, we're almost out of time here, but in the closing minutes, I've got to tell you now, again, for those who may not know, Tom Birch is also an activist in the POW-MIA issue. Tom, your picture was featured by way of AP laser photo on many newspapers recently.
Yes.
You visited Moscow and talked with some veterans, I think, of the Afghanistan War and also the Vietnam War, Russian
yes.
veterans. Would you yes. tell us about that?
Yes, well, what we did, we took a humanitarian delegation over there with a lot of medical aid, and I had, frankly, information about Russian POWs in the hill by the Mujahideen that they didn't know about. And what we in turn met, we had a meeting with the first deputy prime minister of Russia, strictly on the POWs. You had an hour and a half meeting with him, then a follow-up meeting of another 2 hours with him about locating Americans from Korea and Vietnam that had been brought to Russia, in particular Kazakhstan. They were actually from Vietnam. They were run through Kazakhstan. Some of them were turned to layoffs to be prisoners. Others were put in their space program and other engineering skills, and we want these men back. And we gave them some names of these people. Secondly, we met with the former commanding generals of the Soviet advisory effort in Vietnam. We wanted them to start getting their advisors to come forward and give us information about the POWs that we knew they interrogated. And, you know, these things take a while, but we got the meetings. I met with three various generals, who are very successive generals, and I'm talking about 3- and 4-star generals here. We even got a picture in our most recent coalition magazine of General Kapushin, who was the tank commander to help rescue Yeltsin in 91, and we got him holding the POW flag. I mean, you know, you're getting your issue out there when you've got people like that receiving a POW flag and sitting down to lunch and talking to you about the problem. Now, they're not denying it, you understand. The deputy prime minister said, well, you know, that sounds right. We're having trouble locating this because the people in the KGB are blocking us from their files, but we're going to have the prime minister order them to get you the information on these names. That's the kind of stuff we're having. And I happened to notice right after we left that visit, they released another Russian document, you know, that validates that their Vietnamese were holding more than they talked about. I don't think they did that because they like the color of our deep blue eyes. I think they did it because I helped them with some information on their people, and they felt the need to respond to that. So we, you know, we take it one step at a time, but I think the real breakthrough in the POW issue right now is through the Russians, because the Vietnamese, combined with the stalemating and stonewalling of the DIA, have got us kind of an impasse there.
Did you get the impression when you were sitting down in a cordial setting with these Russians that you were dealing with communists, or were you dealing with non-political soldiers who would simply do what they were told?
Well, I have to tell you, I didn't think I was dealing with either one. I didn't feel like I was dealing with communists. I did not feel like I was dealing. The first thing, that they have a lot more veterans in their government, because to stay in power, you have to have the veterans. And in this country, you have to have the money behind you. Over there, you have to have the veterans behind you. So I was basically, probably in all instances, dealing with veterans. Even in civilian capacities in their government. And the veterans who were sitting at the table with me were keeping them in power, so they had every reason politically to want to help us. But what I really picked up on is they don't like the old ways. The Yeltsin people really do want to, you know, straighten all this up. They are a little scared of coming up with people because it might affect their aid package. Frankly, our own government interfered with my thing. I was supposed to meet with President Yeltsin, and the State Department cabled him and asked him not to. And, you know, when you have those kind of mixed signals, that's why we can't make more progress on this stuff. But I think they want to work it on a humanitarian issue. And the Deputy Prime Minister told me, he says, I understand this issue. My next-door neighbor's mother lost a son in Afghanistan. She wanted to know what happened. This is a humanitarian issue. We need to help each other on that, and I will pledge the resources of the state to get you some answers.
And unfortunately, we're out of time.
That was a very sincere statement. That was not a political statement.
And unfortunately, we're out of time. Tom, okay. Thanks for joining us.
Okay.
Ordinance. If the commission grants our request, the Lake Winnemucet Civic Association will be happy to waive any right we have may have to object to the time delay in the second reading of both ordinances. We understand that your staff intends to recommend that you proceed with a comprehensive plan amendment but delay second reading of the PD ordinance. This will allow more time for the parties to try to reach agreement on the remaining issues. We appreciate the opportunity to continue working with your staff and pledge our best effort to seek timely resolution. If staff's recommendation prevails, we would suggest that second readings of the PD ordinance be postponed until October 18, 1993, to coincide with the time frame set for comprehensive plan review by the Department of Community Affairs. Sincerely, Marsha L. Kropp. And I would like to add my thanks to the city staff, to Wayne, to Dave, for their cooperation this last couple of weeks. It makes you feel like that citizen participation really is listened to, and we appreciate that, no matter how this winds up. I have copies of this. Thank you.
Thank you, Ed. Is there anyone else who would like to speak on this issue? If not, we'll close the public hearing. Go back to the regularly scheduled meeting. Gary?
Yes, sir, Mr. Mayor and Commissioners. you each received a document in your agenda which listed the changes individually. These are the changes that were made pursuant to receiving DCA's ORC report. The full document is here. The map is here. Whether I can say that we're going to be approved, be found to be in compliance at the end of 45 days or 55 days, no, I can't say for sure. But what I can tell you is that we have not been working in a vacuum. I have been working with our representative in Tallahassee, with DCA, Mr. Tim Cannon. But even he says that all he can do is, if we adopt what he has suggested and what we have been working on, that he will simply support our recommendations and what his supervisors do. He has no control over. But to the best of my knowledge, we have addressed DCA's concerns, and I would ask that you adopt the city's 1993 Cycle 1 Comp Plan Amendments text and maps. If you have any specific questions, I would be happy to address them.
Is there any specific questions from the commission?
We pays our money and takes our chance.
If not, I would ask that a motion be given.
I'll move approval.
There's a motion for approval. Is there a second?
Second.
There's a motion and a second for the approval of 9332, amending Comprehensive Plan 93, Cycle 1. Is there any further question?
Just, David, that I don't have any problem with any amendments except 920908.